mornings he wants eggs. Some mornings he wants oatmeal. He's never told that he can have ice cream only if he finishes other foods first. Both boys are growing appropriately and are getting the full spectrum of foods that they need to be healthy. Supporting your child's innate relationship to food and eating. It's important for parents to know some of the basic concepts of a child's relationship with food. In the following, you'll find some of these concepts, along with some practical tips for protecting your child's inborn intuitive eater. Children are self-regulating. For the most part, children are self-regulating in terms of how much food they need. Some children have a lower growth rate, and some a faster growth rate. And this varies from time to time. They'll eat exactly what they need in order to follow their own path. Children grow in spurts. Sometimes they eat as much as an adult, and sometimes as little as an ant. If left alone and not nudged, they'll get everything that they need. If they are physically active, they will be hungrier than if they are sedentary. Children's food preferences vary regularly. Don't worry if your child only wants peanut butter and jelly for many weeks and then won't look at it for months afterward. If no issue is made, such as, "You've always loved this, why aren't you eating it now?" the child is quite likely to go back to this food sometime in the future. Conversely, if you serve the same food every day, the child might become disinterested in it. As in the concept of habituation, too much of a good thing can become boring and rejected. Alternate foods every few days to maintain children's interest in different foods. Look at the whole week instead of a particular meal or day of eating, and you will see that your child will get everything that he needs. Children seek autonomy. An important developmental task of childhood is the quest for autonomy. This can show up as early as 2 years old or even before, and continues throughout childhood, peaking in adolescence. In adulthood, a sense of autonomy is one of the signs of a psychologically healthy person. If we help our children to feel empowered, whenever safe and appropriate, this developmental task will take root. Allow your children to serve themselves as soon as they are developmentally able to do so. If you serve them, you are presuming how much they need to satisfy their hunger. They will take what they need, without feeling pressured to clean the plate. Saying no to eating is often a way for a toddler to show his independence, especially if he's not hungry. Don't worry, when he's hungry, he'll eat. If you have raised your children as intuitive eaters, you can feel safe allowing them to order for themselves in a restaurant. If not, they may need more guidance from you. Involve children in food shopping and meal preparation. They'll be more interested in eating the foods they pick and prepare. Introducing new foods is an art. Parents often expect their children to try a new food when offered, even if it's only a bite. The first moment of feeding conflict can begin at this point, if foods are not introduced without understanding of how children can react to this new experience. Allow children to experiment with food, especially if introducing a new food or an already accepted food prepared in a new way. A child might put it in his mouth, take it out, play with it, and then try it once again. Or he might not be ready to eat it at all at that time. Let children be a little messy. This sensory experimentation phase is part of normal development. It can sometimes take 15 exposures or more for a child to accept a new food. Just because you introduce something new once or twice and the child refuses it, don't give up. Keep serving it from time to time without any pressure. At some point, the child might try it. When offering a new food, offer it with some familiar foods. Don't put out several new foods at once. This can be overwhelming for the child, and he might refuse everything. At around age 2, children often become fearful of new things, including new foods. Again, don't worry. If the child isn't pushed, he'll eventually be willing to try new things when he's ready. There are going to be some foods that your child simply doesn't like, just as adults have particular food preferences and dislikes. Your role as the parent is powerful. Parenting is an awesome task. In the realm of feeding your children, following some basic guidelines will smooth the way to a positive outcome. Stay neutral when serving food instead of pushy. If you're invested in what or how much your child eats, your child will react to you instead of to his inner signals. Eat a variety of foods yourself and enjoy and appreciate food together as a family. Remember, children love to mimic their parents, even in the realm of eating. Above all, do not bribe, reward, or attempt to comfort with food. Food is for hunger, satisfaction, and nourishment. Help your children learn how to endure feelings. Let them know that their feelings are real and valued, and that there are ways to be comforted without using food. The power of restriction and deprivation. Mary, Denise, and Molly. The examples above illustrate the best outcome of raising children with respect for their intuitive signals. These children were provided an early eating experience that involved an orientation to a wide variety of food, which was also served to the whole family. There were no messages of food type restriction or comments about food amounts. Other clients, especially those who are still struggling with their own disordered eating, have a bit more trouble giving the same message. Mary has 4.5-year-old fraternal twin girls. Molly is naturally lean and extremely active. Denise is more sedentary and softer in build. From early on, Mary worried about Denise's weight, and after the girls learned that play food existed, marveled at what limited interest Molly had in these foods. Mary had done a wonderful job of cooking nutritious food and serving it to the girls at family meals. The problems began, however, when the parents began to set limits on how much play food Denise could eat. Mary recently reported a story that had a troubling outcome. Molly rarely was interested in play food, so she was left alone. Denise, on the other hand, loved it. One day, Denise had found 2 bags of M&Ms and offered one of them to Molly. Molly wasn't interested, so Denise took the 2nd bag and brought it to her room. At first, this appeared to have a happy message. Denise was willing to share with her sister and did not need to eat both bags at the same time. Mary has been working on liberalizing her message about play food to her daughters, and she thought that this example showed that she had made some progress. A little later that day, Mary noticed that Denise had shut herself up in a room and was secretly eating her stash of candy. Mary walked in, and seeing a guilty look on Denise's face, asked her if she thought she had to sneak candy. Denise said, "Yes, I thought you would be mad." Mary said, "Denise, you can have as much candy as you want. I won't get mad. I just want to make sure you eat enough nutritious food, too," which she definitely does. "But I understand that some days you want 8 pieces of candy, and some days you don't care about candy at all." "Also true. As long as you eat other foods, too, you can have as much candy as you want." Denise then asked, "Will Daddy be mad?" Mary answered, "I'll talk to Daddy." To which Denise replied, "Sometimes I just want spinach and corn and rice." She followed that by saying, "I want to do the candy dance." And she sang a very happy song and dance about how much she loves candy. Mary expressed concern to her husband, Danny, about the message he was conveying to Denise and told him about the sneaking story. She convinced him that if they continued to put limits on Denise, they would basically be telling her that she could not trust her body. In addition, she warned him that Denise would end up like Danny's mother, who was constantly on diets and beating herself up for blowing her diet. She told him that if he wanted to inflict that kind of pain on his daughter, then he should keep telling her that it's bad to want to eat candy. This poignant story shows what can happen when parents have anxiety about their child's weight and believe that they must control the amount of play food a child can have. Molly never got this message, as they weren't worried about her weight, and she self-regulated her play food intake. Fortunately, Mary was wise enough to see what the future could hold if they continued to give the message that there were good foods and bad foods. For Mary, who had grown up with extreme food restriction, the outcome of this childhood environment was a serious eating disorder. Fortunately, she continues to receive counseling for herself and for the whole family. With hope, both parents will learn to treat their daughters equally and eliminate diet mentality messages. There are numerous studies that support the concept that dietary restriction can have serious consequences for children. These include the potential for increased weight gain, eating that is not connected to hunger, preoccupation with food, and eventually lowered self-esteem. Putting pressure on children to eat when they refuse food, misinterpreting normal weight as overweight, restricting certain foods, and soothing children with food all interfere with children's trust in their inner signals about eating. Ellen Satter believes that over-control and under-support are at the basis of many childhood weight problems. Nancy. The foundation for intuitive eating is based on a number of psychological and physiological factors. The power of deprivation can be a profound psychological factor, leading a child, as well as an adult, of course, to make some very dysfunctional food choices. This point is well illustrated by a frightening story that I was recently told by a client of mine who is an early childhood educator. She told me about a little girl who was in the preschool class that she taught. Little Nancy was a beautiful child with graceful hands and fingers. Nancy's mother believed that sugar was a dangerous food and forbade Nancy from eating anything that had sugar as one of the ingredients. She even went so far as to inform the teachers that Nancy was never to be given any food that contained sugar. One day, my client noticed that Nancy had not gone onto the playground to play with the other children. Instead, she stayed back in the classroom and was found picking up the crumbs from the floor that were left behind from the snacks that the other children had eaten. Those dainty little fingers not only picked up crumbs, but also picked up pieces of dirty raw rice and dried beans, which the children used for play. This child was so desperate to taste what she couldn't have that she went to this extreme to fix her feelings of deprivation. After seeing this behavior continue, the teachers went to Nancy's house to confront her mother and ask her to stop restricting Nancy from eating what the other children were eating. Even after being told what Nancy had done, her mother remained vehement that Nancy was never allowed to have sugar. Healing deprivation. Pamela and Eric. Fortunately, many parents are more receptive. Pamela is a mother of a healthy, average-weight 5-year-old who was referred to work on her lifelong history of restrictive eating. In the early part of her treatment, she mentioned that her son Eric was hyper-focused on dessert. After each bite of dinner, he would beg for the dessert, while not appreciating the tastes of the other foods served to him. Pamela's husband was very adamant that Eric finish his dinner before he could have dessert, and the dinner table became a battleground. Pamela and her husband came in for counseling together one day and were astonished to hear the recommendation of putting all of the foods on the table at once. Yes, including the cookies, along with the chicken and the broccoli and the bread. Although Pamela and her husband were skeptical, they were open-minded about this new approach. It didn't take very long before Eric stopped seeking the desserts over all other foods. Did he still eat the cookies? Of course. But instead of eating them first, for fear that this new way of eating would disappear, along with the cookies, he began to eat all of the nutritious foods along with the cookies. Fear of deprivation is a powerful force in the seeking and overeating of restricted foods. The surest way to get a child to be disinterested in the foods the parent wants him to eat is to tell him that he can't have his dessert until he finishes his dinner. Quickly, dinner becomes the enemy and the barrier to getting what he really wants. The limited access, conditional availability, and the measured serving size of the dessert create an overvalued treasure. In addition, the child's need to express his autonomy is displayed through fighting about how much he has to eat before he gets the prize, or whether, in a defiant nature, he'll eat anything at all. Once the parents stop being so invested in controlling what goes into the mouths of their children and stop metering out the amount of disapproved foods, an amazingly rapid ceasefire emerges and calm falls upon the feeding experience. Steps for protecting and reinforcing your child's intuitive eating experience. Introduce foods according to your pediatrician's guidelines. Introduce a variety of nutritious foods to your baby as soon as your pediatrician recommends that solid foods are appropriate. Begin with grains or vegetables, depending on what your pediatrician tells you. If you begin with grains, offer as many whole grains as possible, so your child gets used to the flavor of the whole grain. When instructed, introduce vegetables. Start with mild green vegetables, and after the child is accustomed to them, introduce the orange, sweeter vegetables. Again, when instructed, add fruits, and then all other foods. If your child is thirsty, offer water rather than juice. Juice was only introduced into the food supply during the early 1900s. Before juice was invented, people mainly ate fruit and drank water. Juice can fill up a child's stomach and distract from true hunger signals. Filling up with juice within an hour before a meal will lead the child to feel too full at the next meal. Prepare balanced meals. When children are able to eat all foods, prepare balanced meals that include protein, complex carbohydrates, especially whole grains, fats, fruits, and vegetables, and high calcium foods. Dairy products provide the most reliable source of calcium. Postpone introducing play food to very young children. There is no need to introduce play food to very young children. They'll have plenty of opportunities to experience these foods. If, however, someone offers a play food to a toddler who is at an age to be able to eat it, don't forbid it. Allow the child to experience this food without comment, either negative or encouraging. How many times have you seen a parent try to urge the one-year-old to try his birthday cake? And how many more times have you seen a parent tell a child that she can't eat what the other children are eating? If your child has been oriented to a wide variety of foods when he or she begins to eat solid foods, the play food will not become overvalued. It will take its place in the child's healthy and unselfconscious relationship with food. Share the power of nutrition early on. Teach your children that food can have the power to give them energy, make their bones and muscles strong, help them grow, help them avoid getting sick frequently, help them think well at school, and help them heal their wounds. Some people call these foods nutritious foods. Others call them growing foods. One person even named them vital foods. Pick a word that works for you. Talk about foods in non-moralistic terms rather than good or bad. Telling children that a food is a bad food can instill a feeling of guilt. Instead, tell children that there are some foods that don't necessarily help the body, but exist just to taste good. You can call these foods play foods. Don't call them junk food, because that implies that they serve no purpose and could elicit shame for eating something of no value. Tell them that just as they don't go to school all year round without weekends or breaks, they also don't play all year round without going to school. Their minds need school to help them learn, just as their bodies need nutritious foods for the purposes mentioned above. Tell them that they also might want some play foods just for fun, just as they have some playtime along with their learning time. In this way, they'll have a reason to eat healthy foods and not overvalue the play foods. Balanced eating is the result of this kind of thinking. It will also reduce the risk of your child gravitating toward the play food at another child's home because it has been restricted in your home. Put a variety of foods on the table. Prepare balanced meals for your children and try to eat with them whenever possible. When the children have become aware of play food, occasionally put on the table, along with all of the nutritious food. Make no comments about which foods or how much food a child should eat. Some days he may only want the play food, but most days he'll eat an array of most everything that is served. Refrain from telling your children to eat a certain amount of the nutritious food before eating dessert. Otherwise, your child will likely start a negotiation process that can only lead to tension and bad energy at the meal. Remember, your child's food choices may change from meal to meal or day to day. In the big picture, he'll get all the nutrients that he needs. Pack lunches that have a variety of choices, including a little play food. If your child never gets a cookie in her lunch, you can be sure that she'll trade something with another child to get what she wants. Make healthy snacks available for your children. Have healthy snacks readily available for when your child gets hungry between meals. These snacks might include cut-up fresh fruit and vegetables, nuts, cheese, hummus, whole grain crackers, etc. If these foods are ready to eat and visible in the refrigerator or on the counter when your child gets home from school or is home during the day, there's a good chance that she'll go for them when she's hungry. Do not be a short order cook. Make one meal for the whole family, but be sure to have a number of choices of side dishes so that each child has something to eat, even if he doesn't like the main course. Tell them that you will be preparing meals that are well-balanced because you believe that well-balanced meals will help them grow tall and strong and will help to keep them healthy. Let them know that you won't be making several dinners for the family, but assure them that you will be serving some foods that you know they each like. Reassure them that you will not be monitoring which of the foods or how much of the foods they are eating. That will be their job. Trust your child's innate abilities. Children know how much to eat, to match hunger needs, and to stop eating when full. In the big picture, your child will get everything needed for growth and health and will maintain a flowing and positive relationship with food. Healing a battered relationship with eating for your child. Parents often seek nutrition counseling for their young children, hoping that the children will either learn to eat a wider variety of foods or will lose weight. Often it's unnecessary to actually work with the child. Instead, the parents are taught about the intuitive eating philosophy and are given practical guidelines. Sometimes it is still necessary to directly help a child to change eating habits and feelings about food. 5 tips for parents for making changes at home. Here are some of the steps that can help you make changes. These tips can apply to children as young as the age of 5 and even through the teens. This is especially geared toward children who are known to be aware of the household eating rules. For younger children, changes can be initiated without actually talking about them. Explain the following. 1. Tell your child that you have read a book or talked to a professional who has given you some very different ideas about eating than what happens in your house. Acknowledge that parents can learn new things and change, and that you are eager to make some of these changes. This will intrigue your child and get the soil ready for implanting the new ideas. 2. Kids have the ability to know how much to eat, but it gets confusing when parents take over the job of making these decisions. Tell him that from now on, he will get to choose how much he wants to eat at mealtime and that you will be providing a variety of foods at meals, which includes previously forbidden foods. It will be up to him to decide which foods he wants to eat of the foods offered to him and how much or how little of these foods his body tells him he needs. 3. Make sure to state that you are not a short-order cook, but assure him that you will be serving some foods that you know he likes. 4. Ask him if there are any foods that he would like to have in the house that are not usually present. You'll see a great deal of excitement and disbelief in the child's face at this point. 5. Most importantly, stick to your promise. Your child will test you to see if this is too good to be true. He might wait for you to slip and say that he doesn't need more food, or that he should eat some vegetables, or that he has to eat a certain amount of nutritious food before he can have any dessert. It will take time before your child believes that you really aren't going to interfere with his eating. This advice can be scary for many parents. Fears stem from worrying that others will think that they're not good parents because they're not enforcing strict eating rules, to worrying that the child will never stop eating, will only eat desserts, or won't eat enough food. For some parents, it is helpful to seek counseling with a nutrition therapist or a psychotherapist who is supportive of intuitive eating. With counseling, the concerns can be vented to the professional instead of to the child. It is also very important that both parents are aligned. Just as in any parenting issue, a united front allows the child to feel safe and not confused. In addition to the guidelines, it is critical that each parent examine his or her own beliefs about food, eating, and the body. If there is any form of disordered eating in the family, it can be difficult to heal a dysfunctional eating experience in a child. Remember, parents are important role models, which is critical in helping a child return to his intuitive eating roots. Eating family meals together and regularly is important. This provides an opportunity for your child to witness parents or siblings eating nutritious foods, even when your child is not ready to try them. When this is layered upon a neutral atmosphere about what and how much the child is eating, your child will eventually eat balanced meals. When your child is overweight, over 30% of kids in the United States are overweight. Doctors and parents are naturally concerned and worried that if something isn't done about it, these children will be at risk for many health issues. Unfortunately, well-meaning attempts to manage this problem often yield dismal results. Placing eating restrictions on children who are overweight can have a powerful influence on future disordered eating and body image. Leanne L. Birch, a professor of human development at Pennsylvania State University, and her research group have extensively evaluated these issues. Their studies show that parents using restrictive feeding practices backfire and create bigger problems, which lead children to eat when they aren't hungry, often resulting in greater weight gain. In a study of 5-year-old girls, some overweight and some at normal weight, the girls whose mothers used restrictive feeding patterns were shown to have the greatest level of overeating behavior by age 9. Parental restriction is only one side of the coin. The other side is parental pressure to eat more healthy foods. In yet another study of 5-year-old girls, when they simply perceived parental pressure and control about food, it resulted in them pulling away from their internal signs of hunger and fullness. Instead, some began to restrict certain foods to eat emotionally and to eat with abandon. It can be very difficult and even terrifying for parents to let go of monitoring their children's eating patterns, especially if a child is overweight. But, as in any behavior, the more a person is pushed to change a habit, the less likely that the habit will change. In the case of a child who has been overeating and or is overweight, limiting the amount or the type of food that the child eats can only lead to feelings of deprivation and rebellion, just as diets do for adults. The child who is told that he must limit his eating will have a deepened sense of mistrust of ever having enough. This child is likely to sneak food, eat as much as he can at a friend's house, or eventually develop a serious eating disorder. Feelings of shame can emerge in a child who breaks the rules in an over-controlling eating environment. It can also ultimately affect the health of the child's relationship with his or her parents. The solution, once again, is to help the child listen and respond to his own hunger and fullness cues. The child's job involves first healing the fear of deprivation or the rebellion that has emerged in response to being told what to do. When this healing takes place, the child can then begin to learn to trust his hunger and fullness signals. This might feel like taking an impossible leap of faith, to give up the attempt to control your child's eating, especially if he or she is overweight. Perhaps Michelle's story will help reassure you that it can be done. Michelle. About 10 years ago, a call came in from the parents of an 8-year-old girl seeking help for her overeating. They were concerned about her weight and worried about potential health issues. The parents reported that they were both dieters, but knew that a diet was the wrong approach for their daughter. They didn't think that they were ready to change their own habits, but said that despite this, they would do anything they could for their daughter. After a few sessions with the parents, it became clear that this child would benefit from counseling. The first time that Michelle came into the office, she said that she wanted to have her parents present during her session. In subsequent sessions, one or the other of the parents, and sometimes an aunt, accompanied Michelle in her session. Their presence was wonderful, as not only did Michelle feel that her parents would be supporting her in the changes that were suggested, but also that she would have an arena to speak up to her parents about her feelings. The first session with Michelle was remarkable for her. She was excited to hear that her parents were willing to make changes, and that because of these changes, she was going to start to feel better. During that session, Michelle revealed that she often ate too many desserts at parties. She'd eat so much, especially chocolate, that she would end up having a very bad tummy ache and would have to leave the party. When asked why she thought that she ate enough dessert to make her feel sick when she was at her friends' houses, she said that her parents wouldn't allow any desserts at home unless they were low in calories. She didn't like the diet desserts, so in order to get what she liked, she felt the need to eat as much as she could at her friends' homes. In these sessions that Michelle attended, there was never a word spoken about weight. No scale was ever used, and the emphasis was always on how Michelle felt, both physically and mentally. Any focus on a child's weight, either by her parents or by any professional, whether doctor or dietitian, runs the risk of giving some very damaging messages to the child. Michelle was a very intelligent, perceptive, and healthy little girl with good self-esteem. The chief concern was to maintain this self-esteem by avoiding giving her the impression that she wasn't good enough at her present weight. By emphasizing the hope that she wouldn't have to overeat and get the resulting stomach aches, she had a concrete reason to make changes. Almost any child who is overeating will have the ability to say that he or she feels too full and uncomfortable, even if it doesn't result in stomach pain. Talking to a child about future health issues is also not the correct course. First of all, it can scare the child and make her have excessive worry about herself. Unfortunately, we hear parents tell their children that they will get diabetes or have heart problems if they don't lose weight. Secondly, the concept of future heart problems is too abstract, even for an adult, let alone a child. Worry about future health issues does not have the power to motivate behavior change. Feeling physically better in the moment has far more impact. After Michelle talked about eating too much at parties, she was asked to list the foods that she would like to regularly have in her house. Of course, chocolate was one of them. She gave her parents a list, with a promise that they would take her shopping to buy them. When asked how she felt about that change, she was elated, but also skeptical that her parents would follow through. In the nutrition counseling session, Michelle was taught that her body would give her a message about when she was hungry and when she was full. She said that she knew when she was hungry, and she usually knew when she was full. Then she asked a provocative question. How can I stop eating when I know that I'm full? Rather than provide a pat answer, Michelle was asked, if your tummy is full, does your body need more food? She replied, well, no. Michelle was then asked, so if your body doesn't need any more food, then what do you really need? This 8-year-old child got it, right there, and responded, I need to know that I'll be able to get the sweets I want at my own house. Michelle added, sometimes I need to eat when I'm feeling bored or sad or lonely or scared. Many adults can't make that connection. After it was explained that some people think they need food to help soothe their feelings, Michelle was asked if she could think of anything else she could do to help her when she feels bad. Michelle proposed that she could color in a coloring book, play with her dog, or talk with her mom. This was the beginning of helping Michelle heal her feelings of deprivation about food and start to separate her physical cues from her emotional cues for eating. Michelle's parents followed up on their promise to bring previously restricted foods into the house. Over time, Michelle started trusting that she would have sweets at home when and if she wanted. As a result, her feelings of deprivation vanished, and she found that she only needed moderate amounts to satisfy her. She stopped overeating at parties, talked about balancing her nutritious foods with her play foods, and grew into a tall, athletic young woman. Michelle continued to come in for sessions from time to time until she was 14. Not only did her disordered eating stop, but, more importantly, she was no longer at risk for developing an eating disorder. The success of this story rests on her parents' willingness to change the way they handled food for the family, their support of her and her needs, and their wisdom to not draw any attention to her weight. Eventually, they were even willing to give up dieting themselves and to strive to reconnect with their own intuitive signals. Preventing overeating problems. To learn about preventing eating problems, reference the earlier sections, supporting your child's innate relationship to food and eating, and steps for protecting and reinforcing your child's intuitive eating experience. It is also extremely important to work on your own eating issues if they exist. Get help for disordered eating. And above all, make no negative comments about food or body to your child. Remember, children want to be like their parents. Pay attention to what you think and say about your body or your eating, because your child will absorb your comments and will imitate what you say and how you eat. 10 steps for working with your child who is an overeater. With the previously mentioned guidelines, you'll have a much better chance of preventing eating problems for your child. If a child is already in the throes of overeating, you may be able to solve the problem using the following 10 steps. If you feel uncomfortable doing this on your own and need more help, don't hesitate to seek the counsel of a nutrition therapist who is trained in intuitive eating. 1. Ask your child if he knows what hunger feels like and where in his body he feels hunger. Tell him that most of the time he'll feel it in his stomach, but sometimes he might feel it in his throat. If he's not paying attention, he might even feel it in his head. Tell him that sometimes people get headaches from not eating soon enough when they need fuel. 2. If your child is too young to get food on his own, teach him to make sure he tells an adult when he's hungry, so he can get the food he needs. 3. Ask him if he knows what fullness feels like. Tell him that his stomach is like a balloon filled with air. The balloon can be filled a little bit, leaving lots of space to fill it with more air, just as his stomach can be filled a little bit, leaving room for more food. The balloon can be filled with a little more air to make it bigger, just as his stomach can be filled with a little more food to make him fuller. Or either of them can be filled with so much air or food that it seems as if either could pop. 4. explained that filling his stomach with enough food will give him plenty of energy to run and play, but filling it with too much food could give him a stomachache. You can illustrate that just as the car needs gas or fuel so that it can drive, his body also needs fuel to be active. If the car gets filled with too much gas, the extra gas will run over the side of the car. But for him, unlike the gas tank, too much fuel or food can make him feel uncomfortable or even sick. 5. Ask him if, after he feels comfortably full, he thinks that his body needs any more food. If he says no, present a question about what he really needs, since his body doesn't need the food. If he doesn't know, tell him that sometimes people eat too much food because they're bored, or because they want something to make them feel better when they're sad or scared. Help your child come up with some alternatives to eating if he's feeling an emotion that's leading him to avoid the feeling or soothe it with food. 6. Above all, never talk to your child about weight, and never put her on the scale. Talk about the immediate benefit of feeling more comfortable in her body if she eats according to her hunger and fullness signals. Do not talk to her about future health problems. 7. Ask her if there are foods that she'd like to have in the house, which have previously been forbidden. Tell her that you will buy those foods and keep them in the house. 8. Tell your child that you are going to back off from telling him what to eat, what not to eat, and how much to eat. Tell him that you will provide him with a variety of foods at a meal, some nutritious and some play foods. It will be up to him to have what he wants in a meal and how much he needs to take care of his hunger. 9. Let him know that you trust that he will eventually be guided by his own internal voice about hunger, fullness, and food preference. Tell him that you know that his body will help him know how to get balance in his eating. The more that your child knows that you trust his inner wisdom, the more he will eat in an attuned way, and the less he will eat in reaction to you. 10. Ask her if there's any kind of help that she would like from you. You don't want her to feel abandoned by you. You simply want her to know that you will no longer attempt to control her eating. She may say that she would like you to remind her to pay attention to her hunger signals, or to remind her to eat slowly, so that she can notice her comfortable fullness. Or she may ask you to stay out of it. Honor her wishes. When your child is underweight or resisting food, addressing the early stages of food resistance can greatly reduce the risk that your child will end up with a full-blown eating disorder in the future. See Chapter 16 for more information on treating eating disorders. We frequently receive calls from parents who report that their children are not eating enough or that they can't get them to eat anything but white carbs. They tell us that the dinner table, and usually all other meals, has become the battleground between the parents and the child. These food fights are preventable, and once they have become established, they are treatable. But what happens if there has been a disconnect between the child's innate signals and the parent's agenda for eating? How do you take the eating experience out of the boxing ring? 5 steps for reestablishing peace between you and your food-resistant child. Your child's need to exert his or her autonomy by rebelling against eating enough or eating nutritious foods can often take precedence in the child's psyche. These needs can include the need to either please the parent or the need to eat enough to meet biological and or nutritional needs. 1. If you back off on pressuring your child to eat more or to eat better, it is likely that his rebellion will diminish and eventually vanish. Hunger is a very powerful motivator for seeking food if the more potent psychological need to rebel isn't present. Trust that your child's relationship with food will heal, and he will begin once again to meet his hunger needs. It might take quite a while for your child to trust that you mean it when you say you're backing off and leaving the food decisions in his hands. Seek help, if necessary, to support you during this stressful time. 2. Use the same strategy that was discussed previously in regard to beginning a dialogue with your child about the change that is about to take place. Let him know that you love him and truly believed that you were doing the right thing by trying to direct his eating. Tell him that because you have been worried that he wasn't eating enough nutritious food, you have stepped in to guide him, but have found that your suggestions have only led to tension between the two of you. 3. Explain that one of the exciting things that you have learned is that he has all of the innate knowledge he needs to guide him to eat healthfully. Because of this new knowledge, you're going to leave the decisions about what he eats and how much to him while preparing and serving an array of foods. His job will be to listen to the signals that his body gives him about how much he needs to eat, and to check in with his body to see how he feels physically after making his food choices. 4. Assure him that you're not going to worry about his eating anymore, because you truly believe all of the new information that you have learned. 5. Once again, be prepared for the child's disbelief, excitement about the lifting of the pressure, and then distrust about whether you will really stick to your word. The more time that goes by without your comments, the more your child will trust that the match is over, and you will see a remarkable transformation take place before your eyes. Your child's food intake will increase, and the ratio of play food to nutritious food will begin to decrease. Parents who have been engaged in food fights with their children have very challenging work cut out for them. They are worried about what others will think of them if they see that their children are underweight or not eating healthfully. They are worried that people will think that they are neglectful parents if they are no longer making comments to their children about eating. They think that it is their job to continue to push them to eat correctly. But once they surrender and accept that what they're doing isn't working, they begin to take the first steps to healing their relationship with their children in the realm of eating, and helping their children heal their relationship with food. As a caveat, there are some situations that require adjunct work with a psychotherapist, specializing in children's behavior and/or eating disorders. Unfortunately, we're hearing more and more about very young children who are being diagnosed with anorexia nervosa. If you feel that your child's eating refusal is deeper than a rebellion against being pushed to eat, then please seek psychological help. Also, if you suspect that there may be sensory integration problems, neurological problems with organizing bodily and environmental sensations, for example, a child having extreme reactions to different textures of food, then you may need to seek the help of an occupational therapist specializing in sensory processing dysfunction. Adolescents are filled with contradictions. One day they can be delightful and almost childlike in their openness and trust. On other days they can be sullen and barely talk. Understanding the developmental tasks of adolescence is tantamount to helping teenagers heal their relationship with food. In order to find their own identity, teens need a sense that they are emotionally independent from the adults in their lives. They attempt to achieve independence in many arenas, some that can be healthy, such as developing their own political viewpoint, finding hobbies or interests that are different than those of their families, or playing music that their parents hate. They may experiment with behaviors that are unhealthy, using alcohol and drugs, having sexual experiences before they're emotionally mature, and eating in a way that they know will anger and frustrate their parents. Having fed my son a large variety of healthy foods throughout his childhood, I admired how well he ate in comparison to some of his friends. When he became a teenager, however, I was astonished to see how often he would stick a soda or some other example of play food under my nose just to taunt me. I later learned, of course, that this was one of the ways he could exert his independence from his nutritionist mother. We frequently receive calls from the parents of adolescents who are worried that their teens are eating too much, gaining too much weight, or are eating unhealthily. Some of the concerns that we hear range from parents hoping to help their teens avoid the unhappiness that they had experienced as adolescents, to parents who have been told by the doctor to monitor their teens' eating in order to help them lose weight to avoid medical problems. We also work with many adolescents who have put themselves on diets. Whether the diet comes from the doctor, the parent, or is self-imposed, it will inevitably have unfortunate results. Put simply, teens who dieted were more likely to gain weight in the future than those who didn't diet as adolescents. A 1999 study of teen girls who were followed for 4 years showed that the girls who labeled themselves as dieters at the beginning of the study were about 3 times more likely to become overweight than the girls who were non-dieters. In 2003, it was found that binge eating was associated with dieting for both pre-adolescent and adolescent girls and the boys. In a follow-up of 3 years, there was more weight gain in the dieters than in the non-dieters. In yet another study of adolescents in 2007, it was also found that dieting predicted future weight gain. This study found an increase in binge eating and a decrease in breakfast eating for teen girls who dieted. Teen boys were also found to have an increase in binge eating as well as a decrease in physical activity. Since dieting is not the answer, how can we help our teens to maintain their innate intuitive eating or help them get back on the right track to rediscover their intuitive signals? 10 steps for promoting intuitive eating during adolescence. Remember that just as in the terrible twos, adolescents are fighting for their autonomy. They are likely to rebel against anything that is forced upon them. 1. Provide easily available, balanced food for your teens. Keep a variety of nutritious foods in the house, as well as the play foods that your teen enjoys. 2. Ask your teens how you can help them. They may appreciate your help in making breakfast or lunch, and by providing snacks that can be taken with them. 3. Involve teens in food shopping and in the preparation of meals. Many teens love to cook and are happy to be included in this experience. 4. Don't fall into the trap of telling your teen that he can watch television after school only while he's having his afternoon snack. Pairing these activities can give a dangerous message. Teens need time to chill before beginning their homework. If you connect relaxation with snacking, they might learn to overeat as a procrastination technique. Some teens have reported that the roots of their overeating behavior began here. As long as they were having their snack, they were allowed to watch TV. In order to get more downtime, they would continue to eat and eat and eat. Let them know that you understand that they need to relax after their long day at school. Encourage them to eat a snack if they're hungry after school, and then suggest that they do a relaxing activity before starting their homework. In this way, you are separating eating the snack for hunger from watching TV for relaxation. 5. Maintain family meal time as often as possible. This can be a challenge when teens are involved in many activities that take them away from mealtime. It will still be beneficial if only a few meals in a week are eaten as a family. 6. Do not make mealtime the time to reprimand or ask too many questions. It is best for mealtime to be a calm and peaceful time to allow for optimal satisfaction and recognition of fullness signals. The best way to get a teen to overeat or to refuse to eat is to begin a fight at dinner. 7. Make no comments about what or how much your teen is eating. Also, be aware of your own body language or body scanning of your teen. No eye rolling. Adolescents are highly sensitive to criticism and judgment. even the slightest perception that his or her weight is unacceptable can lead to shame, attempts at dieting, rebellion, or even eating disorders. 8. If you notice that your teen is overeating, binging, or gaining weight rapidly, recognize that this may be a sign of emotional distress or unmet needs. Instead, spend quality time with him or her. Be patient, and let it be known that feelings are appropriate and may be expressed as much and as long as needed. 9. Rule out any medical problems by having regular checkups. If there is no medical problem, and it becomes clear that your teen needs more help, seek the help of a counselor, psychotherapist, and/or nutrition therapist who is trained in intuitive eating. Be extremely careful to speak with a professional first. Explain what you're noticing, and also ask about this person's belief about dieting versus intuitive eating. Many teens have reported the onset of an eating disorder coinciding with seeing a professional who has prescribed a diet or a meal plan. 10. Be highly aware of your own relationship with food and your body. Never make disparaging comments about your body or spend time talking negatively about what you've eaten or about how much or how little you've eaten. To illustrate the process of helping a teen move from resistance to making changes in his eating to becoming an intuitive eater, listen to Bobby's story. Bobby was 15 when he first walked through the door for nutrition counseling. He was a teen who had been referred by his doctor with a prescription to lower his cholesterol and lose weight. It was clear that he was a super smart teenager, with a fair share of skepticism. When he was asked what his goals were, he said that he was only there because the doctor had sent him, but he guessed that he would like to be healthier. Similar to many teens, Bobby exhibited a high level of sophistication and appeared to be capable of understanding the tenets of intuitive eating. As sophisticated as he was, however, when he heard that no foods were going to be forbidden, the grin that came across his face was priceless. When the psychological concepts of deprivation and drive for autonomy were explained to him, he relaxed and was eager to share his story. His history included a report about parents who were overly focused on healthy food and exercise, countless attempts by these parents to get him to lose weight, and poignant tales of emotional eating that felt uncontrollable to him. In the beginning, Bobby's treatment was centered on helping him find satisfaction in his eating. This meant paying attention to eating when he was moderately hungry so that he wasn't in primal hunger when he started a meal. Additionally, he was guided to find foods that he truly enjoyed and to eat more slowly, so he could appreciate the taste of the food. He set his own goals so that his need for independence was honored. Bobby reported that he was eating unhealthy foods, which he was buying at school, and not really enjoying them. One of the first goals that he set was to find more enjoyable foods, which would replace the foods that were not giving him satisfaction. It was remarkable to see a young man suddenly take interest in eating more healthfully, after he had been told that all foods were fair game and that nothing would be forbidden. This was a boy who would regularly buy play food at school, as his parents didn't know what he was buying. There is that adolescent rebellion at work. He soon decided that he wanted to focus on throwing away food after he noticed that he was full. He had recognized that the food wasn't as satisfying after he was full, and he was committed to work on ending his meal at this point. After several months of treatment, Bobby saw his urgency to eat foods lessen because there was no forbidden food. He now trusted that he would always be free to eat them if that was his choice. Sifting out the eating triggered by defiance and rebellion freed him to look at the times at which he was eating for deeper emotional reasons. He saw that the anxiety that came with striving for excellence in school was the hardest emotion to handle. Now that he had a license to eat whatever he wanted, whenever he wanted, he found that he could deal with most other emotions without using food. Bobby identified ways in which he could find joy in life and realized that these were the things that soothed him more than food had. He also got more support for his